In 2018, I launched a web series with my business partner, Jules Ferris, called The $100 Million Journey, where we're going to work to get her business from $8 million a year to $100 million over a five-year period. And we shot 10 episodes. And if you want to check them out, you can click on this podcast episode and we'll take you to them. And we just both got crazy busy. Her business got busy. Life just got in the way of us continuing to film it. However, today we decided to do an update show and fill in what happened, what she learned, what she's doing now. It's a fantastic conversation. And I always think of Jules as my little sister. So check out this conversation I have with Jules. Before you do, I want to give a shout out to our title sponsor, Finmo. Finmo is a Canadian mortgage application, document collection, submission platform designed specifically for Canadian borrowers. It's very easy to use. It's got cool features like smart docs. It knows because it's smart. What documents your client needs based on how they fill out the app. It's got smart submission notes, so it pulls key data from that application to send to your lender in the notes, as well as it's connected to Lender Spotlight, which is the best tool for searching rates and guidelines. Check them out at lendesk.com/finmo and check out this conversation with Jules. Hey, Jules, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Yes, it's been a minute. So we started a series several years ago called The $100 Million Journey, which we're going to touch on. And for a few reasons, it didn't end up finishing the recordings, but we want to do a wrap up on that. But before we jump into that, tell me about what's new in your world?
I mean, so many things. I'm recently engaged. I'm getting married this summer. So
congratulations.
Very exciting stuff. Thank you. I spent the last year traveling the world and working remotely. So lots of big changes and experiences for me.
Right. And I remember when we first started working together, you couldn't not have somebody in your office. Like you wanted to have all of your underwriter in your office.
And then
now you're traveling the world. It's like, what happened to you? Right. You know? So that's amazing, the growth that you've gone through in that. So walk me through, maybe let's start off
on that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. So tell me about the 100, so that last year, so we'd got up to I think the fourth year was something I want to say 60 some million. So then what happened in that next year? And it was a pretty crazy year that year for you, but where did you kind of end up and what was the kind of the biggest lessons from that year?
Well, the final year that we recorded, I was at 62 million. And I think we did one episode in 2020 and I was targeting to do 75 million that year when we filmed our last episode, which was in the summer or something. And we ended up hitting 100 million that year.
Right. Which is freaking crazy. So 5 years to 100 million, essentially which was totally awesome. And so what was your biggest, what did you learn the most from going from, from starting out to getting to 100 million? What are two or three of the biggest things that you had to learn to be able to do it?
I think, the biggest growth lessons that I experienced was to release control, I would say, number one. And that was, and I still struggle with that today, to be honest, but it's definitely getting easier. And I think that you don't have to be perfect and that's an impossible target to try and reach is perfection. And that really held me back in my career and my passion for helping people and making a difference, always having to be perfect and being afraid to make mistakes really held me back from being able to do that.
Right. So the thing is, it's also what made you good at your job. Part of it is it's a hard thing to be because you're good at your job because you were so making sure everything was lined up. But you also, there's a point where there's just so much work that you can't possibly do it all without major burnout. And so was there any point where did you learn to relinquish control because you just had so much to do that you had to? Or was it that you just realized that you're I'm holding back my team. What was what kind of forced this lesson on you?
Well, I think I always knew that I had to. We knew from the very beginning that the only way for me to scale my business was to release control. It was impossible to grow if you have to do everything. So I always knew I had to. And slowly but surely over time, I sort of eventually released control of certain areas of my business just because, it was at capacity. There was no way for me to be able to hang on to doing everything. But I think for me, honestly, I was forced into it. In my travels last year, I spent 4 months in Bali, and in Bali, I was 15 hours ahead of everyone back home. And so while the normal workday was going on, I was sleeping, and it was an opportunity for me to fully release control. I was forced into it, but it ended up working perfectly. My team rocked it, and there was no changes to my business. So it was a beautiful opportunity.
Right. The fact that you could do that. So what made you decide to do this world trip last year that you did? Like, because you were gone basically for the year, right? You were at different countries and stuff. What prompted it?
Yeah, honestly, for me, it was complete and utter burnout and needing.
You don't say. Not with all of it. You do. I can do everything. And eventually, like six, seven, it's almost like you put out almost at 7 years by that point. So it's like a sabbatical, if you will. You didn't stop working, but you stepped back a bit in order to like recover, right?
Totally. Yeah. Just burnout and needing a change and needing to do things differently and needing to kind of get away to figure that out. It was right after the COVID, you know, real estate craze. Basically, there was 2 years of just nonstop. And I think every broker felt it. And just for me, not being able to release control during that time, and as busy as we were, I was working around the clock and highly stressed out and worried about being perfect and all the things. So yeah, I just one day decided that's it. I was going through a difficult time personally and came out of a really busy year and burnout, and I just needed a change. And so I just like packed everything up, rented my house out and started traveling.
Did you have a plan, or did you just sort of build the plan out a few months at a time?
I kind of built it out as I went, but Bali was the one place I knew that I wanted to go. And so I like booked my flights, I booked my first Airbnb, and then I kind of was going to figure it out once I got down there. And then prior to going to Bali, so this is my first time ever traveling solo, and that's a big, scary thing to do. And Bali's a long ways away. So I started out my traveling journey in Mexico. So I did 2 months in Mexico. I was a short flight home if it didn't work out.
The time zone wasn't too bad, so you could still be involved in the day-to-day. So that's actually, you kind of took a baby step towards going something that's much more like opposite side of the world.
Totally.
Okay, yeah. So what did you have to change? So let's talk about Mexico and then Bali, but when you're in Mexico, as somebody who's very involved in your process of how your mortgage business is run, what things did you have to let go first?
Just in terms of the process, like I had to let go of, you know, document collection and setting client appointments and just things like that, that are so time consuming. And those were easy things for me to let go of because they're not the most enjoyable.
Actually shocked you hadn't, I mean, that you're still doing that is crazy to me, but that's okay.
Do you mean when I was traveling or?
No, just in general? Like when you were, even before you were traveling, you were not setting all your own appointments, were you? Like somebody was.
No.
Right.
No.
Okay. But you're initially the things you started to offload were the tasks that were like somebody else setting up my meetings, doing these different, like that was the initial stuff that you were okay. I remember one of the things you had said to me, which I've told many people about this is that, because again, back to that, you want things to be perfect. So even people who are sending, like Becky would send an email on your behalf, you would get her to write the draft and you'd check it because you wanted to make sure that it was like, she can probably write them as good as you or better now because she's done it so long. But like that was a way for you to give up some control, to take a little bit of work off your plate without you having to, but you could still have that. If you're the kind of person who wants to look, you could still check it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I still struggle with that. I'm not going to lie.
You still struggle with that. That's so funny. I would be like, let it go, man. It wouldn't bother me in the least, but, okay. So then when you went to Bali, you're like 15 hours difference. So how did you even work from there? Like what was your role or responsibility when somebody wants to meet with you and you're in the middle of the night? Did you do meetings with clients or did you have your team do it or what'd you do?
No, I did. Yeah. So luckily enough for me, by the time I went to Bali, I had my process such that I wasn't really involved in the beginning stages of the client, like the lead generation client coming into the process. So my team takes care of almost everything until I have that pre-approval call with the client. And so I was able to do meetings still because like 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. was like my 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. or whatever. So it worked out really well for client meetings. They were actually really happy to have evening appointments with me. And then, yeah, my team basically handled everything. So a lead comes in, they'd contact the lead, they'd have the first call, they'd collect documents, my underwriter would do the pre-approval, they'd send an email out, like all of that sort of day-to-day stuff was being taken care of with by them. And then when I was ready for a phone call, I would have it at those office hours.
Right. And so you jump on, you have that time where you do the strategy session. So once the strategy session's done, how long would those, do you spend on those? I got other questions on that after.
On the strategy calls, it really depends. Every client's a bit different. Depends much how many questions they have. I would say 30 minutes to an hour. 30 minutes generally, because we send a really detailed email ahead of time. So they have all of their numbers. And then we're just going over like an explanation of things, some general questions. And then some clients, you know, take a bit longer. So up to an hour.
And so your team is actually prepping all that stuff for you though, right? Like the actual, yeah. And then you're jumping on, explaining, really wrapping your arms around that client and making sure that they love you and stay working with you. So, okay, after that meeting, so you do the strategy call, they're out doing, if they're house hunting, whatever, how many more meetings are you doing after that? Or is that all done by your team now?
Pretty much done by my team now after that.
So you're just doing one meeting basically with the client typically?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm still very involved. Don't get me wrong. I'm very involved in the process still.
I don't think you've, you haven't, like, you're not like a complete, you know, you still want to know what's happening.
I will always be this way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I have, that's the one main meeting that I have with a client. But then, you know, when there's an accepted offer, I'll still pick up the phone, give them a call, just double check what they want to do. Like, I'm still involved in client communications, but that's the one meeting.
Right. Okay. And then did you do any prospecting, or did you just work basically database, or how did you continue to get clients when you're gone for a year?
Yeah, I haven't really done a whole lot of prospecting. I don't think I've ever really done a lot of prospecting, to be honest, Scott. But I nurture my database. I always have. That's really the main prospecting that I do, is just taking care of my existing database, and the leads come in organically.
And you just do a great job of communication throughout the loan process, which creates more referrals and clients. So like I always say, the best prospecting is your process. If it's really good, it'll actually help you generate more business.
Absolutely. It's amazing. And our process is so dialed in. I'm so proud of it. And we've really evolved over the years that like we're handling every stage of the process for that client. We're so organized. Our communication is so good. And we handle it right out to the end, like to the lawyer appointment, which I think is so important. And we're so detailed with the lawyer appointment as well. Like we even had lawyers that talk about us in their meetings and just say, hey, what a great team we are. We've had conveyancers reach out and say, we used to work on your files. You guys were so organized and efficient, and we'd love you to do our own mortgage. So like stuff like that generates business for us.
Right. So the lawyers are actually using you because everything is so clean and you're like easy to work with. And so is there any certain types of files that you won't do anymore? Like, because I remember before we had like a no-go list or like a no list. So is that still the case? And if so, has anything changed on that?
It's hard to say right now. It's a slower time right now, right?
So if you're not this tall and you're not getting on the ride now, it's a little, like, it is different a little bit for sure.
It is different. So where we had to set some pretty firm boundaries in like 2021, when it was just chaos and we couldn't help everybody, it's a little different now, but we still do interview up front to make sure they're going to be a fit. Like, do you have a down payment saved? What's your credit like? Do you have collection items, bankruptcy? Do you have a job? You know, how much do you make per year? And if they're not going to be able to qualify, or the mortgage size is going to be so small that we're not going to really be able to do anything for them in our market, we'll generally stop there and say there's not likely anything we can do. Maybe get a co-signer, give it more time. We'll kind of support the client through like preparing for the future, but we will not put any work in, you know, to waste the client's time and also our own resources.
So who does that initial lead right now? If a lead comes in, is it a Becky that does the reach out? Because you've got two team members, or is there two or three of you now, or how many of them are there?
Three.
Okay, so what would, yeah, maybe break down for me what each of them does, so that, because I know that I remember what they used to do, but it's probably changed a little bit since, you know, we chatted last.
Yeah, so Steph is our executive assistant. So she handles all document collection, new applications, client follow-ups, all of our renewals, scheduling appointments, kind of all that back-end stuff. And then Becky is our director of client relations. So she's really like the team lead. Like, Becky handles everything. She's mama bear. She looks after all of our clients when their files are live. She really is that main go-to with communication for clients. She's licensed, so she can have all the conversations with them. And then she works with Shannon on getting that client pre-approved and when it's live. And then Shannon is our underwriter. So she's our director of lender relations. She works with the lenders, the appraisers, and the lawyers.
Right. Okay. And that's amazing. Well, I know that like a couple of them have worked for you for five or 6 years now. And we were saying before we turned on the recording is that the people like yourself are doing pretty good volume. If you have to constantly replace your people, it's really a struggle. Like, I think it's a leadership issue. Ultimately, you have to grow as a leader. Yeah, you got to hire the right people, because we did hire some people at the beginning. We're like, wrong fit. But when you find the right fit, it's really about becoming a better leader and making sure. I've got people now that work for me that have tried to quit, and I'm like, you're not quitting. They're like, why not? I'm like, let's figure this out. Like, you know, and I wasn't like that when I was younger. And so tell me about that. Like, how important is it that you have such a stable team?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think team is the most important component of being able to grow. And it also makes it fun too. And taking good care of your team, like, I cannot stress that enough. And it is why I've had the team that I've had for so long. And they'll be with me for life. They're so loyal to me.
And why you could go away for a year and your business, and even somebody like yourself who has you have a high standard, for how you expect the client experience to be. And you can maintain it because you have a team that can help you maintain it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it trickles down from the top, and how you treat your team is how they're going to treat your clients. And that's not the number one, but that's so important. But taking care of your team, just to make them feel empowered and supported and appreciated, they're going to work harder for you. They're going to be loyal to you. When you need support, they're going to be there to offer it to you. So I'm super easygoing. I always have been. You know, we have office hours, but if they need to leave to go to a kid's doctor's appointment, or something's come up, or they're having a tough day, or whatever, I'm super flexible with their hours and allowing them time to just do what they need to do. I'm very kind and understanding to them. I'm not perfect. I'm human. So yeah, of course I've had moments where maybe I've lost my temper or got upset or whatever, but that's really something that's so important to me, is just like, hey, we're human and we're going to make mistakes and it's okay. And the team, yeah, you know, they'll come to me sometimes and be like, oh my God, like, I really messed up. I totally forgot this or whatever. And they're so nervous. And I'm just like, yeah, like, no problem. Everything is solvable. There's always a solution. Like, I don't want you stressing about it. So yeah, just treating them with kindness, taking good care of them, paying them well, and being flexible, then yeah, you got a team for life and one that's going to work super hard for you.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So is there any changes that you've made to your process or your business in the last year that you've found to be like, that were, that have been helpful?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've tried to automate a little bit more this year. So going back to what you said also, about who takes the first lead, that was a change in our process this year. I wasn't taking the first call. It was like no docs, no talk kind of thing. And I actually think it's really valuable for me to be on that first call, and be able to win that client over and really talk strategy with them and just get to know them and them get to know me. So I take the first call, and that was a change that we've made. And then from there, my team takes over. And then, yeah, like we've tried to automate more so that we can be more efficient. And one of the cool things about that this slowdown in our industry has allowed is time to really look at what works, what doesn't work. What did we struggle with most when we were going through that 2020-21 chaos? And how do we want to improve so that when it comes back again, and you know that it's coming back, we're going to be ready for it. And so one of that was just our efficiencies. And I, being as stubborn as I am, never wanted to automate anything because I felt like you were losing that personal connection. And that, while that's still very important to me, we've just found ways to automate while still kind of keeping it personable.
Right. So what, so if you don't mind me asking, what tools are you using for that? Like, so what are you using for your like CRM and stuff?
Like, so we're on Pipedrive for our CRM and we use Finmo for our deal submission. And then we use Zapier, which kind of communicates between Finmo and Pipedrive so that it can kind of automate like tasks for us as we move the client through the process.
And do you use any tools for sending videos to clients like Bloom or BombBomb or anything?
No, I need to, I'd like to, but I haven't been sending a lot of videos.
Okay, so you still do a text. I mean, you're excellent writing emails. So I remember your emails were, they were flawless. Like there was not any, like, I have an editor. So now when I write, I love to write emails and blog posts, but I do not trust, my editing is terrible. And so I have somebody that actually cleans everything up for me to. And the occasional time that I post something without it, there's usually, it's like somebody messaged me, hey, there's an error. I'm like, should have got Diana to look at it because I just, I don't have that level of detail. I'm like, I always want to just go, right?
My emails are very detailed and very clear. So it just works for me. I would like to do more videos, but I think for me, like people can feel like they're with me when I talk to them over the phone because of my tone of voice and how excited I am. And they can actually hear that tone through my emails as well. So it works for me.
Right. And it's working. So it's not like it's a, so you've added some automation. What's something that you've automated then? So you've said you've added automation, but like, so what have you automated?
Well, I mean, we've started using Finmo for document collection, which we actually had done in the past. And then I didn't like the way that it was working because I felt like, I think it was Flowify we were using originally, but I felt like it lost that personal connection and it was kind of not organized. So we were sending emails to every client with a list of documents. And then when you get the documents through email, we update the list. And there was just a lot of back and forth. And it was a lot more time consuming for our team. So Finmo, we've started doing documents from there. And it is insane how much time it has cut down. Like it is so quick and easy now. And it's easy for the clients. Plus a lot of clients really like the secure portal and everything too.
Right. And I mean, it's not 100%, but they can hopefully match the document to the location so you know what it is versus sometimes they'd send you a pile of documents and now you've got to figure out, is this actually the thing they said they were sending or is it mislabeled or, and you've got to clean it all up. Anyway, so then there's a lot of work on somebody's, you know, plate to do that.
Totally. Yeah. No. And then also it gives you the tool to be able to say like, no, this document is not accepted. Here's why. And it goes right back to them. It's just, it saved us a lot of time. So that's been a huge automation that we've implemented this year. And then just like in terms of our process and how our team is notified for the next steps in the process, using Zapier, it's allowed us to like create, it automatically creates activities for our team when we move through the process. So before we were like kind of manually doing activities, one person would complete a task, they'd set an activity for the next person. And now that's automated for
your team. Must be like, oh, thank you for doing, for making those adjustments.
Yeah, it's been really good.
Have you done, what about database marketing? Are you still doing, are you doing anything on your database? Because oh, that's where a lot of your business comes from, database or from files and process, but are you doing anything there?
Yeah, I mean, we're just keeping in touch with our database and sharing information with them. We haven't been doing any specific like targeted marketing and like sales strategies.
So but give like, me an example of something. Are you staying in touch? Is that like sending out periodic updates on what's happening? Is it like phone calls? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's a mixture of both. So I would say in terms of emails, we're on the VIP club. So we get a monthly email goes out to our database no matter what. So that's really nice. And that's kind of automated as well. And then whenever there's sort of news or new things that are happening, then I'm sending an email out through MailChimp to all of our clients just to send them the information and updates with what they need to know. And then, yeah, I'm just calling clients. So over the past couple of years with sort of the slowdown that we've had and the challenges that, you know, our clients are experiencing with the interest rates being what they are, we've just been reaching out to our clients and just really being more supportive over the last couple of years and helping them. There's, you know, been some opportunities for new business as a result of it. But for the most part, it's just being that trusted advisor and that first person your client thinks of when they think of a mortgage.
So if you were phoning me, for instance, and saying, hey, what would that conversation look like? So what would you be if you called if I was one of your past clients? Yeah, what would you say?
I mean, it would just be natural just calling to check in, haven't talked to you in a while, like look at their file. How are the kids? How did the renovations go? Like what's new? And, you know, as an example, you're in a TD variable rate mortgage. And I just wanted to call and make sure you understood how that product works. Wanted to see how you're doing with it. A lot of clients didn't understand it. They weren't increasing their payments. They were getting close to their trigger point as an example. And so just walking through it with them and letting them know, oh, here's the important step that you need to make sure you're increasing your payments before this point, or, you know, just working through like the difficulties that they're having, maybe.
And here's the thing. I guarantee you actually explained it to them because you're so detailed. There's no way that you passed over that with clients, but they still don't remember, right?
I absolutely did. But I think still I learned a lot about the product when rates, you know, went up as high as they did. Like nobody really understood the product that well because we had never experienced this before.
No.
And so although they understood the product, they didn't understand the nuances of it. So the trigger rate, the trigger point, sort of what that meant for them. And I think a lot of people, if they're just listening to the media, I mean, there's just so much doom and gloom about that product. Like it was just terrible. And they immediately think they have to increase their payments or they're going to, you know, lose their mortgage.
Lose their home or something. Right, right.
The reality was that they didn't have to. And it is actually such a beautiful product that helped people to stay afloat during the challenging times. So it was just explaining the misconceptions and helping people, I think, through it mostly.
Right. Okay. Is there any other changes that you've made to the business? The executive assistant is new. I think you had somebody before that we chatted. Maybe it was still Steph, but that's probably a really helpful thing for you to. And does your executive assistant help you with personal stuff too, or is it just basically keeping your team running efficiently?
Yep, they do. She helps me with personal stuff as well. I've got a bit more time now, so I've been able to kind of do my own stuff. But when I'm flat out busy with work, absolutely. Anything that they can do to support me with sort of personal stuff so that I can focus on what I need to do.
Right. Okay. Is there any other like changes that you've made in the last little while that you think have been helpful?
Just automating everything. I mean, I think for me, and again, just kind of releasing control. So going back to that, I wanted to be CC'd on every email that my team sent. Because although I wasn't involved in it, I wanted to make sure everything was still okay.
I would be like, do not CC me on these emails.
So that got a little overwhelming. And I just thought, gosh, Jules, like you're trying
to find balance. Do you actually read them all too?
Yeah. I mean, some of them.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
If it wasn't important, I would skim over it. But for the most part, I was. And so, yeah, like that has been, you know me so well. I mean, that's been my challenge from day one. And I think to an extent, that's always going to be somewhat of a challenge for me because I care so deeply about this business and my clients. And I'm a Virgo. I'm going to be a perfectionist my whole life. I'm going to find ways to work with it. But that's just my nature. So it's like, just trying to dial it down a little bit.
Right.
So anyway, the change in that was I just finally had a team meeting and I was like, listen, I need you guys to just control me. Stop stop CCing me. If something's wrong and you need my help, let me know. But please, I can't be involved. I'm sorry that I've been involved. And so my team
holds me accountable.
They were
probably like, thank you. They were probably not like, oh, darn. They were like, oh, thank God.
My team's so good. They hold me accountable. They're like, Jules, you told us you didn't want to do this anymore. I'm like, ugh.
Okay. Right. Yeah. You do have awesome people like that for sure. And it makes work fun, honestly. Like I've one of the things I've loved about the brokerage, I got some amazing people I work with, and I'm like, I pinch myself. I'm like, it's so much more fun to work with great people. And
yeah.
So that's I want to do another chat with you at some point about just sort of like managing mental health and stuff. This was really just, I wanted to check in, see how you've done. I mean, you did the 100 million, which is amazing. And we haven't had a chance to record a video. Maybe we will at some point. We can do like a cut video on some of that stuff, which would be kind of fun. Anything else that I should have asked you that I didn't, or you think that would be, you know?
I mean, gosh, I would say just in terms of, you know, building a business and even starting out, but building and trying to do $100 million, I would say the number one thing is you've got to take care of yourself. I think that is, I mean, going back to what you said on, you know, the mental health side of it, that's huge. And that's been a big, really top of mind for me over this last couple of years. Well, I've been doing a lot of personal growth work and healing work. And I think you can have a great team and the right people, and you can have a wonderful process. But if you haven't taken care of you, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, and you're no good to anyone else, your clients and your team. And you'll, I don't think you're really going to be able to scale and reach that level of success without doing personal growth work. So that's been my number one focus over this last couple of years. And it's been really life-changing and made a huge, huge difference in how I run my business, how I treat my team. I'm so much more laid back now and much more easygoing with the, you know, regular stresses of this business. I mean, things are going to come up. Things are going to go wrong. They always do. But coming from a place of like peace and, you know, being in out of stress response and being in a calm place allows you to find solutions. And so, yeah, I think that's the number one thing that I would recommend to anybody is start there.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. I remember reading about a study that said that you are 40% smarter when you're in a positive state of mind. So if you want to immediately get dumber, it's like get in a negative state and you're going to just not see as many solutions. And so It's, you know, I feel like one of my things is I really am ruthless about staying in it. Like I can take almost anything that's crap and figure out a way to turn it into a positive. And I remember you've always been like that. Cause I remember one time we were driving back and we were talking, this was a conversation we had. You're somebody we had to let go and you're like, oh my gosh, this is stress. And I'm like, I don't think so. I think this person's not the right fit. Great person, wrong spot. And you immediately were like, this is happening for me, not to me. And I was like,
yes.
My little sister, I call you my little sister, you're not, but I like my little sister. I'm like, you are totally like getting this because you were realizing that this was not it was not going to be a fun conversation. And yes, there was going to be, it was going to be challenging, but your perspective was this is happening for me so that I can learn from it and be a better leader, which is now you have a great team that you've been leading. I know people in the business longer than you that have churned through way more staff that are way more stressed out because they're constantly replacing people. And that is just no fun. Like there's a fundamental flaw if that's happening. And
absolutely.
You know, kudos to you for recognizing that and leaning into it.
And I would say on that note, don't be afraid to make mistakes, because that is, you know, the challenges and the struggles that you go through, that is truly where your greatest growth and lessons come from. And that's been the case for me every time. And I really do. I look at the positive because it's like, this is teaching me something. And This is an opportunity for me to grow. And it is amazing. And I'm grateful for all the difficult times in my life because I am who I am today as a result.
Yeah. I mean, so I have some of my stuff that I've done has been like literally a dumpster fire, but then it's like, maybe we can have like a hot dog roast or something, you know, it's a dumpster fire, but maybe we can like roast marshmallows. Like how do we turn this negative thing into some small positive? And if you stay that way, like it, you get through them quicker. Like you really do. If you don't, you can stay in that negative, just bad place so long, and then it doesn't, it's not good. So, yeah, that's awesome. And that's why I love always chatting with you. Okay. We're going to do it. We're going to do another show. We'll talk, we'll do something else in the future on an update, and maybe we'll, you know, the next time you've got some bandwidth, we'll record some more videos and stuff when it makes sense. Cause I'd love to do that too. That'd be a lot of fun. So
I would love that too. I would,
and I haven't aged at all since those videos. So I'll have to get like makeup or something so I don't look any different. You're like, hey, make me look the same age as I was when we started that whole series.
Oh my God. That was 7 years ago. That's crazy.
I know. Hey? Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jules, for chatting with me.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks again for listening. And hopefully you're inspired by that conversation with Jules. And she's just an all around amazing human. Go back and check out that previous web series that we had done. We will do an update video at some point. She's not living in the same town as me right now, so it makes it a little more difficult, but we will do one at some point. I'm excited to do that. And the thing I have to say is, like, the thing about Jules is she was incredibly coachable, incredibly humble, and she just was like, how do I just want to do this better? How do I do it better? How do I do it better? Never got let her ego get in the way, and she's an absolute baller of a mortgage broker now and an awesome human. So if you know her, send her a note. Say, hey, thanks for doing this update. And Jules, super proud of what you've been doing and what you've accomplished. And I have no doubt that you're going to continue to grow over the, you know, the next 5 years will be even better. Thanks again for listening. And as I always say, there's no problem that you're having in your mortgage business that someone else hasn't already solved. Your challenge, your problem is like, who's got the answer to the test? I love mortgage brokering. Hopefully we provide some of those answers for you. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Scott Peckford, and I will see you on the next show.